Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 277, and it's proudly brought to you by the always-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show and aren't already, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is Jason Heaton, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host up in Toronto, James Stacey. James, back from a week away. How was it, and how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. The week away was awesome. Always a good time down in PA. I'm a huge fan of the area, and we took the girls into New York for a couple of days, so got to kick around there and do some.
Oh wow!
You know, New York's become a bit of a work city for me, so I don't do that much tourism.
Yeah,
and then you start stacking it up, and we emptied the girls' battery in about 36 hours and headed back to back to PA. It was good. Everything went pretty well.
Did you stay
well.
Overnight in New York?
We did. Yep. Yeah. Stayed overnight. For those of you who have kids and want to stay in the city, just a quick heads up that the Freehand, which is at 23rd and Lex, hotel I stay at quite a bit and have stayed quite a bit with my wife. They also do bunk rooms. So they have rooms that have four bunk beds in them.
Oh, that's cool.
Which makes it pretty handy and all things considered pretty affordable as far as I don't know if you've ever gone, like Jason, I know you probably haven't, but you know, you, the royal you of the listener, I don't know if you've gone through the trouble of like, obviously if you use like Hotel Tonight, you can't say I want two rooms and I want them adjoined.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to, you kind of have to find a hotel that might even offer that, then call them and hope that they treat your request with respect by the time you actually show up and they have two rooms. Like we got to the Freehand and they're like, all right, we have you one room on this floor and another room on that floor. And we're like, no, dude.
Yeah.
That's not what we booked.
Yeah.
I got two little kids.
Yeah, right.
We're very excited to have, you know, the premise of their own room. I'm very excited to have it 3 feet from my room. So it ended up just fine. Things worked out pretty well. And it was a good trip. Everything was good.
Oh, good.
Honestly, the only thing that I didn't love was the audio quality of last episode. So a small apology to the patient and loving listeners. I'm aware that the audio from that DJI mic that I still really like, but cannot get like a consistent quality out of.
Huh.
I must be doing something wrong. It just didn't sound good at all.
Yeah.
And when I did tests like 30 minutes before we recorded and listened to the WAV file, it sounded pretty good. So I just figured we were fine. It didn't work out. I'm either not going to use it in the future for shows or I'm going to figure out how to use it correctly.
Yeah.
But I think in that scenario, I should have just dragged a mic and a recorder and the rest of it down south. So no big deal. But for those of you who listen and were like, why are we changing what's working? The normal mics are fine. I agree. I shouldn't have gotten so excited about using a bit of new gear. But I don't know. I see people on Instagram and the audio sounds pretty good. And I'm either using it wrong or there's a setting wrong. I'm not really sure. So I'll figure it out before I try again.
Well, you're obviously more versed in the audio tech side of things than me. But I have to say that I was... I didn't notice the audio quality on your end from last week, but I did notice how good the audio quality was from the interview I did with Alex Beskaby last week. I mean, I took along our usual kit or the one I usually use here, which is this Shure microphone and then the H5 Zoom recorder and two microphones, of course. And I'm always impressed by how these things really kind of screen out the background noise. I mean, we had people and rowing machines and airplanes going over, et cetera. And it came out okay. So,
it's so hard to beat an SM58. I don't know why I even try, which for those of you who are listening, who don't care about this stuff is like $100 microphone that you've seen everywhere you've ever gone that had a microphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you've ever gone to a public park where somebody was ranting on a microphone, probably an SM58. If you've ever been to a punk rock show where somebody was swinging the microphone around and smashing the stage and it still worked, almost certainly an SM58. It's just the most ubiquitous microphone. It's what Jason's talking into right now. It perfectly suits Jason's voice.
Yeah, these are nice.
But yeah, the DJ has a learning process on that one. And obviously travel sometimes dictates a difference in audio quality, but I'm glad to be back home and in front of the good mics and the stuff that I know works. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
How about you? How have things been for the last week?
Good. I'm over the jet lag from my England trip and, kind of still in Land Rover mode. I'm halfway through reading The Last Overland, the book that I talked about that Alex gave me as we parted ways in London. And then lo and behold, like I think it was 2 days after I got home, a big package arrived via UPS from our friend Justin Souders. And
shout out.
You know, you've had this lovely kind of watch themed painting that he did for you with your Explorer 2 hanging behind your desk there in your office. And, you know, he had asked me a long time ago, like he said, you know, I'd love to do something for you too. And I said, great, you know, but I'm not that keen on kind of watch themed artwork personally. And he said, well, what about something else? What about your Land Rover? And I was like, that's a great idea. So he asked for a couple of front end photos of my blue Series 3 Land Rover, and I sent it to him, and this box arrived, and it's this beautiful big canvas painted lovely front end of the Land Rover, and I've got it hanging right next to my desk here.
His work is so cool.
I couldn't have asked for anything better than this. I mean, it really is kind of perfect for me. Like, you know, I've got the Land Rover parked out in the garage, but now it's like visible to me all the time here right next to me. And he nailed all the little details. It's even got the TGN decal that I've got above the grill on the front end. So thanks, huge thanks to Justin for sending that over. We can throw a picture in the show notes or you know, I've put one up on my sort of alter ego Instagram feed, Minnesota Bonnet Spares, which I kind of maintain for all my Land Rover geekery. So if you want to go check it out there, I posted a picture of it over there, but yeah, super cool.
You can certainly follow Justin on Instagram, and I highly recommend it. Justin_Souders_art. It'll be in the show notes if you don't have to remember that if you're driving or whatever. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of Justin. He's just a really sweet guy. Even if he wasn't a talented artist, probably still be a fan.
Yeah.
But he's just a really nice guy. We've connected a few times, and he conspired a little bit with my wife Sarah to put together one of an Explorer 2, which is it hangs quite prominently along with some other watch derived artwork in sort of the background for whenever I have to do video calls and that sort of thing. I absolutely love it. It's perfect for an office, and I can see the Land Rover being a great choice for you as well. Obviously, I think watches are kind of like the core, but obviously now you've got the Land Rover. I've seen him do like a golf ball. I can't remember who that was for offhand. I was on his Instagram, but it was like a golf themed one. So just a ton of talent and a really cool style.
Yeah,
because there's a huge amount of texture to the final canvas. So like my daughters find it fascinating just how three-dimensional the paint, like there's big kind of globs and units of paint in various spots. And I don't think you would look at one of his paintings and confuse it for anything else.
Right.
Like they have a very kind of unique effect and style.
Yeah.
That's a big shout out to Justin. We're huge fans of his work. So that's really cool to see you get one and have it be your Land Rover. That's rad.
Yeah, I couldn't be more thrilled. And you know, you talk about kind of the globs and color blocks and sort of drippy bits all over. And to me, it kind of captures perfectly exactly all the oil drips underneath the Land Rover if you sort of squint and look at it that way. And he even nailed the dented front bumper and stuff like that. So yeah, really, really happy to see that. And then also the bonus was it came with all this big packaging cardboard, which is now serving double duty as an oil catch under the Land Rover, the real Land Rover. So it's a win-win. Perfect.
There you go.
Yeah. All right.
How about a little wrist check to get us into the mode for the show?
Sure. Yeah. I'm back to regularly scheduled programming. I've got the Pelagos FXD on my wrist today on a lovely stripy Haviston strap, which I haven't worn in a while. The fun thing about the FXD is, despite the fact that you can't put basically anything other than a NATO or just a single piece pull through strap, like I have bags of those things, so I can just kind of pull out random, even the 20 millimeters work on this, but I've playing with some old straps that I haven't worn in a while, so yeah, good to have it back on the wrist.
You have to have someone kind of make you like a combination leather NATO / bund.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like where the leather NATO could thread into a bund, and that way you could really go.
I do have something like
full ham on that.
Our friend.
Oh, is that thing already exists?
Myron, I commissioned him to make me one for a CWC years ago. It's for a 20 millimeter like CWC diver, but I haven't tried that on this. Huh? You know what? That's a good point. I will fish that out and maybe post a photo at some point. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Jason Bund.
Yeah.
as I saw someone call you on the Slack recently, which I found very, very entertaining.
Yeah.
Kudos to whoever said that. My apology for not having the name on hand. This week, I've got on, because the story went up last week and the watch is now sold out, so kind of missed our chance to really lean into it. But it's this Notus Raven Trail Trekker. So some of you who would have seen the story on Hodinkee, the first batch of the watch has sold out through Notus. So notice it will come up a couple times in this episode because there's the final notes here as well. But I'm super impressed by this. I've known Raven watches, like Steve Laughlin, who runs Raven. We meet with him at Chicago every year. But I've known Steve, like he was probably one of the first people in the watch world that I like traded emails with way back. I was living at my parents' house, so it was that long ago.
Yeah.
And I bought a 44mm Benaris Moray. Mm-hmm. Which is like a Panerai style dive watch, and Benaris was run by Steve before Raven.
Yeah.
And so I go way back with Steve, and then Notice is kind of new to my radar that, you know, I'm aware of them, the collabs they've done with Smoking Tire and that sort of thing. Always really curious, saw some cool stuff at Wind Up, and then Steve had mentioned, oh, we've got a thing coming that's kind of like genuinely in your space.
Yeah.
Like sort of your vibe. And it's this 39.5mm GMT, runs on the new Miyota, so you get a flyer style GMT. The case and bracelet are all gray DLC. The bezel is has a Cerakote finish on it as well. It's just like very matte. I wouldn't call it necessarily tactical because the gray and the yellow feel more like sporting gear than military, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has this really nice build. I would say that case and bezel, obviously kind of inspired by the Explorer 2 from Rolex. Mm-hmm. But then you get a kind of a flat link on the bracelet, single-sided screws, and a really nice dial design. It's all like hyper matte. I'm really impressed. You $875. I think it's in there if you wanted an alternative to something like the Laurier, the Hydra 3, which we've talked about, which is even less expensive.
Yeah.
But it's just nice to see these sorts of watches. I'm not surprised that it's sold out. And just a cool piece. So check that out. That's what I've got on my wrist. It's been fun to be able to borrow it from them, so I'm getting my time in with it before it's got to head back.
This is a cool watch, and I'm looking at the images on their website. We've got a link in the show notes. And I know you wrote the review and you have the bracelet on it, but what that kind of textile strap they have looks pretty amazing too.
I haven't come across a strap like this before, so it's also worth taking a peek at it. It is a ballistic fabric.
Yeah.
It's sewn to have the rigidity of a NATO, but it's super soft. It's like wearing, like if you could make a layered nylon, like from a jacket into a strap.
Yeah.
It's really, really comfortable. I think it looks really good on the watch. And the one thing I would shout out that I think for some people would be worth the price jump from something like the Laurier, Notice bracelet has something called a Node X extension.
Huh.
So it has a tool-less micro extension. It's up to a centimeter. It's 10 millimeters.
Yeah.
Built right into the clasp. But the clasp, the design that they have, and they say right on their website that if you're another watch brand, you can license the design from them. And wow. If you're out there listening and you want to add micro adjust, this is like one of my favorite modern features on a dive watch. I use the one on the Pelagos probably twice a day.
Yeah.
Just a little adjustment here or there. Really comfortable. And I think they've done a really nice job with this. It's a little bit higher tech or more mechanical than the system that's in the clasp on my Pelagos 39.
Yeah.
Little things like that really kind of set a watch apart. Like for me, single-sided screws are like the sign that the person who made the bracelet or made the watch cared.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it means that you don't, like the two-sided screw thing where you've got to use Loctite, you've got to get two screws in it, you've got to hold it a certain way, and like that just means that someone, maybe a brand new enthusiast, not me, I've got all the screwdrivers, I'm a knucklehead,
right.
But like a brand new enthusiast buys your watch and immediately has to take it to the watch store that they were probably in some way avoiding by buying a watch online.
Yeah, true.
They take it in, now they're answering questions, they're worried that somebody might not know how to, like they're aware that they don't know how to size the bracelet, but they don't necessarily know that the person they're asking to do it does know how to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just like single-sided screws are like, it's like, it's a little hint for me that the watch came from an enthusiast.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you really want this one, the price hasn't changed, but you will be waiting into
August, it looks like.
The latter half of the year, August 2024. You know, these are small companies. I don't know how much, like if I was putting my money down for one, I wouldn't be holding them to that date.
Yeah.
You just hope it's close to that date.
Yeah.
That's how this kind of world works. But big congrats to Notice and Raven. And finally getting a chance to check out a Notice was also fun. So big fan of both. Obviously adore a micro brand. And really just genuinely, my enthusiasm for a lot of the watch industry waxes and wanes. But my love for a sub-$1,000 watch made by a watch enthusiast has never done anything other than, you know, be very, very strong.
Yeah, cool choice. Yeah, fun to see something new pop up. You know, we've kind of been in a few exceptions, in a rut lately. So it's kind of exciting to see something new coming through wrist check.
But yeah, totally. That's a solid risk check and a good way to kind of jump into our part two of the 2024 Slack crew and A. For those of you who might be absolutely brand new, how do we normally explain this? Our normal Q&A comes out monthly, and it's for the paid side of the TGN kind of community. And that's audio recordings that are then answered by Jason and I. Sounds kind of like a radio call-in show, that sort of thing. This kind of flips that on the head, where we take text questions from the Slack community to kind of give you an idea of what's going on in the hive mind of Slack. And then we read them and answer them here. So it's been fun. It's something we tried last year. It went really well. We did part one 6 or 7 episodes ago, and we just have like probably 40 leftover questions. So there'll be probably a part three and a part four. Today's part two. And do you want to kick this one off from the moderator himself, the scuba daddy, Chris Soule?
Yeah, he's got a good one too. This is a good place to kick off. Chris writes, two truths and a lie. Three outrageous statements about yourself, one of which is a lie. Throw them all out there, embellish a tiny bit if you desire to sell the story, and then let the crew speculate, but don't reveal the lie until the next crew and A. This one could be fun. What do you have? Why don't you give us one first here?
All right. Here's my three. One of these is a lie. Two of them are absolutely true. My least favorite food in the world is lasagna, and I'm not going to try yours. I've tried enough. That's one. Second one, I was a possible professional contender in pool in my early 20s. Could have gone pro if things had gone a different way. Turns out there's not necessarily a ton of money in pool.
Wow. Wow. The hustler.
For my third one, I have a good shot of probably knowing the lyrics to every Lana Del Rey song ever made. Take your pick on which three of those is the lie.
Whoa. I mean.
So you can, do you want to take a guess and we'll talk about it in three, or do you want to hold off on the guessing and we'll come back to it in three?
I'm thinking, I think the professional pool thing is the lie. I just
okay.
I feel like I've played pool with you before, and I don't remember you being particularly great. I mean, no offense, but I think at some level in the penthouse at SIHH, maybe it was too many whiskeys or something.
No, but
I can't remember, but that's my guess. That's my guess. Lasagna, though.
I guess we'll see in the next episode.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What have you got for your three?
All right, my three. I once was the lead actor in a German language play in which I played the hero and ended up forgetting half of my lines in front of a live audience. That's my first one. The second one is, I once led a life of crime, stealing newspapers out of corner boxes until I got caught by the police. And the third one is, I was born right-handed, but a childhood injury forced me to use my left, and I never went back.
Oh man, that is really tough. The play feels possible to me.
Mm-hmm.
So does stealing things, but I just don't know why you'd be what's the market for newspapers? Were you selling them?
This is probably showing my age, but you know, there used to be these corner boxes where you'd put a quarter in and pull the newspapers out, and I was stealing the newspapers. I guess it was just a thrill. It was just kind of one of those, you know, the thrill of getting away with something.
For sure. No, I understand that fully.
I didn't resell them. No.
And then the third one, an injury that caused you to form a new dependence on your left hand. I'm going to say it's the left hand thing. The last one's the lie. But we'll find out in the next episode.
Yeah. Whenever that comes, right? I'm sure Slack will be a buzz with all of these.
Yeah. Probably sometime in the next couple months.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It'll be fun to keep an eye on the episode chat of Slack in the next.
Yeah, weeks. Definitely see what people's guesses are for sure. Yeah. But that's a fun one, Soul. Thank you so much for that. Next up, we've got one from Lee, who has a question for me. He says, as a regular traveler and a father with kids, how do you and Sarah manage the all of the needs with lots of parents in the TGN community and many who travel? It'd be great to hear from your family handles it all. I mean, it's a Google Calendar is kind of the core. It's like genuinely understanding and setting certain expectations. And then I just, the other side of it in keeping the answer short is I turned down a lot of travel. Probably 2/3. I moved to either somebody else on the Hodinkee team, or I just turn it down.
Yeah.
you know, the scheduling can be such that it can be difficult to feel like you have any actual time with the kids if you don't make that time. And, you know, I'm a fairly organized person. I don't love administration.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this before, maybe not specifically, but I have a real, my year really goes in seasons, which I suppose everyone does because there's four seasons. But for me, it's either summer or it's not. And when it's summer, I'm not as good an employee. I'm worse at podcasting because I'm better at being present as a dad. My kids aren't in school, right? And that's we really try and tune as much of that as possible to like time at the cottage, right, weekends right. away, special moments, that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah. And do you use like FaceTime or Zoom or something when you do have to travel to kind of?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of FaceTime. Yeah. You got to FaceTime with the bunny. You got to FaceTime with the kids. The whole thing, yeah, for sure.
I think I saw a picture of you holding a baby duck or something recently. Was that?
Yeah. My in-laws in PA. It's on my Instagram. Me holding a baby duckling, but my in-laws in PA picked up 3 ducks and 3 chickens. They have a coop. Oh. At their house, and so I didn't realize you could buy a duck for like $6. But yeah, that's the story behind that photo, which many people were asking if the duck was mine, what the duck's name was. I'm not sure the duck was named at that point. It was a couple days old. But yeah, hopefully that answers your question, Lee. Thanks so much for sending that in. Next up, we've got one from a gentleman going by Great Lakes Watch, all one word, on the Slack. You both fell into a black hole and popped out into a parallel universe that never invented watches. What would your new collection interest be? Man, as a kid, I kind of collected anything I could get my hands on, if I'm honest.
Oh.
Oh, sure. I still have stamps. I had a lot. I had a lot of sports cards.
Yeah.
It's probably not even the right term for it.
Right.
All sorts of stuff. I mean, like I've got that more. I would say I'm more of a hoarder than I am maybe a collector, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like all that kind of stuff would have been on my radar. I don't really know what, as an adult, probably cameras.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I have such a fascination with them. And now you're starting to see I don't know how much of you guys follow this. We've talked about it a bit on the Slack, but like you'll see people are now 3D printing modifiers. So you can use your phone as the film essentially for 100-year-old cameras.
What?
And that makes me, I want to spend so much money to try that out. Oh yeah, there's people fitting, you know, medium format into like with these, you know, baffle boxes essentially. Yeah. They're not baffled.
Yeah.
And then you slide your phone in and it's at the correct distance to function as the same way the film would have.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool.
And you can shoot through this old equipment.
Wow.
It's I'll put it on the Slack. I'll put it in the show notes the rest, but there's some of this stuff on Instagram that I'm finding really fascinating.
Wow.
And also being able to like share that hobby with my kids has been really fun. My girls carry cameras when we go places.
Yeah.
It's been great, you know, whether it's an Instax camera or a vintage film camera or something more modern.
Yeah.
It's just such a great hobby, and the stuff's endlessly collectible because everything kind of slightly changes the experience, whether it's a new lens or a new this or that. Like you can, it all kind of reflects in on itself.
Yeah. You know,
how about you?
Well, I was just, my initial response to this was going to be, I don't really collect anything else right now besides watches, and so I didn't think I would really collect anything else, but you kind of threw it back to your early days and when you were a kid, looking back, I did collect a fair bit too. I had a pretty sizable collection of like Matchbox cars. I had a lot of those. I collected like you, I had sports cards, mostly football cards, which I believe my parents still have some in their basement, which I probably should go through and figure out what to do with. You know, I'm not sure I would collect cars. I for a while there, before I really got into watches, I was kind of a car flipper. I never had a big collection. I mean, I currently have 2 Land Rovers and then we have a Volvo daily driver. But yeah, it used to be kind of a cyclical thing where I'd get a car and drive it for a couple of years and then flip it for something else interesting. So, but you know, collecting cars is something that requires a lot more money and a lot more space, which I don't have right now. So. But yeah, in place of watches, I suppose that there probably would be some void that would have to be filled. I'm not quite sure what that would be. But cameras is a good one. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I would. But I do have a history of it, so I suppose I probably would fill the void with something. Be interesting to find out.
Yeah, and the wiring doesn't change. It'd just be, you know, a slightly different circuit
right.
somewhere out there.
Right. Interesting question. All
right, fun one, Great Lakes Watch. Appreciate that. Next up, we've got kind of a complicated one from Kyle C. in D.C. It's a two-parter. Let me see if I can get my way through this. Put yourself in the shoes of Edmund Hillary or Victor Vescovo, where you've been tasked with accomplishing something record-breaking. Sparing no expense, what record would you try and break? What summit would you reach or depth would you explore that no other person has ever done? Now put yourself more in Corey Richard's shoes. Shout out Corey, saw him recently. Like when Vacheron had him test the Everest GMT, and imagine you get to design and carry a prototype watch along with you. What brand would you partner with, and what does the watch look like, and how does it help you break your record? Jason, have you ever like thought, oh, that's a record I would take on?
No. No, I'm, yeah.
I don't have that, whatever that, we're just talking about wiring, whatever that wiring is, I don't possess it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we've spoken to so many people through this show, through Hodinkee, through this world, mm-hmm. that like have done things.
Right.
Like some genuinely remarkable things, and you go like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure that's for me necessarily. I guess for me it might be something like driving.
Yeah.
Like whether it was, you know, maybe it's a Perry Dakar, maybe it's a Pan Americana or something like that. But I can't.
Maybe we've already broken records. We just don't even know about it.
I guess, hey, maybe so.
It's podcast related or something, you know.
it's just us and cereal right at the top of the podcast charts. Yeah. Just fighting for those records.
Right, right.
Like you could tell that I don't even have a modern blockbuster podcast reference. I think it's been a while since Serial cranked out an episode, to be fair.
Right, right.
Anything leap to mind for you? Would it be, you know, trying to get up a mountain or climb something no one's climbed before?
I mean, I kind of shot for the moon here. You know, maybe I misinterpreted Kyle's question, but I kind of came up with this idea of, this is absurd, fly to and then dive under the ice on Jupiter's moon Europa. So this is like, okay, you know, this is a pure fantasy, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I like it, though. This is a whole different... I went so literal.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't sure. And maybe that's what he was after. But, you know, in terms of terrestrial or earthborne records, yeah, I'm like you. I'm not wired that way. I kind of go for sort of personal challenges that I know are things that that other people have done and could do far better than me and have done much more extensively. But for me, it's more personal challenges, not really breaking other people's records. I like your idea of a long drive, and it reminds me of when I was in England to talk to Nick English. He's doing the Peking to Paris drive, which just sort of fired my imagination. But again, that's not record breaking unless you do it faster than anybody. But so I kind of went for this far flung thing. Kind of looked into which of the moons or which planet has some potential diving on it, and came up with Jupiter's moon Europa, which has some big bodies of water that are frozen and under ice. And I thought, okay, that's where we'll go. We'll go full on with kind of a space adventure and then throw some diving into it. And, you know, who knows what all that'll require. But then the second part was the watch. Which watch would you take? Which brand would you partner with? And I thought, you know, for kind of a far out sort of space and dive related thing where you're going to need something durable with some functionality, I'm going to go ahead and partner with Sinn on this one.
Great call.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they've got some experience with extreme temperatures and vacuum resistance and air pressure and, of course, water resistance. And I think I'm gonna have them spec out like a titanium dive style watch that has a complication that shows however you keep time in space travel, whether it's, you know, in sols, I guess that would be like the sun time, or maybe Jupiter has its own, you know, because of its own orbit, it would have a different time frame. It would have to have a depth gauge, of course, because batteries aren't going to work in my dive computer after such a long journey and the temperatures, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And it's going to be an automatic, obviously, so to avoid the whole battery issue. Good loom, of course, titanium, etc. But that's my grand adventure. And of course, to get there, I'll have to live till I'm about 230 years old. But that's just a small,
give or
small
take
thing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. The Zen sub Jupiter. I like it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Europa. It's a winner. We'll just call it the Europa.
Yeah, exactly. Europa, the Europa.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I didn't come up with much. I mean, there's always like stuff I would like to do. And as far as watch companies go, I mean, if I could do something in Western Canada, it'd be cool to do it with a Halios, mm-hmm. like with a custom Halios of some sort. A fun question. One, I don't know. I can't say I have like a specific record in mind that I always thought like, that would be the one to try and try and do. Like, I don't know, like if I was a significantly, I mean, like not even a little bit, if I was an order of magnitude better driver, like I'd say, well, set the lap time at Nürburgring or something crazy, right?
Yeah.
And for that, I'm not sure what I, you know, probably would have to go with a more of a sporty chronograph racing watch sort of outline. So.
Right.
Yeah. Fun question though, Kyle. Thank you very much for that. Next up, we've got one from Adam Peterson, who said, pick the most underrated watch from each of your five favorite watch brands at the moment. Your list of brands doesn't need to be too thought out, just the top five that come to mind. All right, Adam, this feels like one that could be an entire episode. I'm not super sure how to address it all that quickly, but Jason, anything leap to mind for five favorite brands and their most underrated watches?
Well, I've got four. I came up with four favorite brands. I'm either misread or blanked out his question. But the first watch that I'm going to throw out there is, and one of my favorite brands is from Blancpain. And I've always loved the Air Command, which looks like a 50 fathoms with the chronograph functionality to it, although it has pretty poor water resistance. But I just find them incredibly beautiful. As I was looking through their website, I realized that they made a 36 millimeter titanium Air Command. And
ooh, okay, that's cool.
I just feel like that, and it's in blue. I mean, this is a stunning watch. And, you know, there's not even a date function on it, so you don't have to quibble over, you know, kind of a 430 date placement like you do on a lot of 50 fathoms. It's got those beautiful, prominent push pieces, two register chronograph. I mean, this is a gorgeous piece. And I feel like it's underrated. I feel like nobody really talks about Air Command. I think it's always 50 fathoms. So that was my first one. I guess along the same line, I wouldn't say it's my favorite watch, but I think it gets kind of unfair criticism or oversight from people, and that is the Black Bay chronograph from Tudor. I think it didn't strike me as a great watch when it first was introduced. I thought it was kind of a weird mishmash of kind of styles, but since then, as I've seen more pictures of them, I've sort of warmed up to it, and I think it's just a different riff on what we all know and love about the Black Bay. So, you know, I as much as I'd love to see a new version of the Heritage Chrono, I think, you know, we're left with the Black Bay chronograph for now, and I'm going to go with that one. And I don't know. The Malor 72 from CWC is another one I came up with. I have one of them that's this tiny little, you know, kind of take on the British infantry watches that CWC made, with their little tiny old logo and little hand wound thing. So that's kind of a fun one. Everybody talks about their dive watches, but nobody really looks much at the Malor 72, which is kind of a cool one. But that's kind of where I end. I had a Railmaster 40 millimeter from Omega.
Yep,
which I think
was on my list as well.
Is a good one. But that's kind of where I stand. I guess it's only four brands, but that's all I got for you today.
Yeah, I mean, the other ones that leap to mind for me, I guess now discontinued to some extent, but the Rolex Milgauss has always kind of seemed, if you're talking within the guise of Rolex, kind of underrated.
Yeah.
You know, especially if we're talking blue dial, like the kind of more interesting colorways. I think every time I see those, I'm always pretty excited, even though, like, I mean, all things considered, it's essentially a Datejust.
Right.
Which is of course not a bad thing, but like that is a more common thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I think that the other one that really jumps to my mind, if you look at another huge brand like Omega, I'm always surprised that the X33 doesn't have more, the first gen of the X33, the sort of like Mars timer, you know, with its crazy high alarm and the titanium case and bracelet. Like, I get that it's difficult to live in the shadow of the Speedy Pro, but this is just such an incredibly cool watch.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even say that Omega is necessarily one of my favorite brands, but it's a watch that like has always kind of stood out to me to a certain extent, which I think is pretty fun. I think if we're going Tudor, it's hard not to highlight the North Flag or the PO1, the two kind of like oddball offerings of the last several years. Tudor is a favorite brand of mine. I have a watch that maybe is the underrated option in the Pelagos range in some ways, but it's still like a banner watch for the brand. I feel like the North Flag and, you know, options like the PO1 are so weird that they fully, not unlike the X33, sit in the shadow of the larger models.
Yeah.
The Ranger is not underrated or overrated, but with a few tweaks, it could be one of the major watch lines that they produce.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like just a huge appetite for something like Tudor's take on the Explorer.
Yeah.
And I understand that's also like to some extent outside of the fold. And then like, let's go Zin. Let's wrap it up with Zin. I still think after talking about it for a long time, owning one, I think the 144 is underrated.
Yeah.
You know, the brand gets a lot of attention for 857s, gets a lot of attention for obviously the U series. The 356 is an incredible watch. Really, really nice. 104, awesome. 105 in the more modern sense, but like just quietly in the background, you get a ton of features. You can get versions that are time only in the 144 chronograph, GMT, really wearable, really adaptable to a lot of different wrists, great on a strap, great on a bracelet, really solid watches.
Yeah.
I think those would be my picks from some brands that I like very much.
Yeah.
But like I said, that question could easily go for
totally
an episode.
Totally. And I think your PO1 choice is spot on. That to me is kind of the, like the poster child of underrated or underconsidered watches for, you know, for obvious reasons. It isn't definitely oddball, and I don't think Tudor ever expected it to be a, you know, banner choice, but yeah.
I think it's also one of those things where like the timing and the way that the watch was launched mm-hmm. made it tough. I think a lot of people thought that they were going to get more like a Black Bay 54.
Yeah, right.
From some of the teasers and the stuff that came out that year. It was also one of these years where, like, because of the Black Bay, the attention on Tudor was through the roof.
Yeah.
And I think that people wanted core Tudor product, not a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
And I say weirdo with nothing but love. I love weird watches.
Yeah.
But I also like conventional down-the-middle watches, too, like my Pelgos 39 or a Black Bay.
Right.
And I think that sometimes a watch comes out that's, like, it happens all the time with cars. Or, you know, go back to watches that are crazy popular now, like a Royal Oak.
Mm-hmm.
Those watches came out and took some time for people to understand. And I'm not saying, like, 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, the PO1's going to pop like a Royal Oak. But I'm just saying, you know, sometimes things don't always fall into the right timing. Right.
Right. So right.
That can be a part of it there.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for that question, Adam.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to one from Dave Payne. He says, a pretty popular post theme on our Most Certainly Watches channel in Slack is the 5-watch collection. Assuming the constraints of watches you currently own or have owned in the past, pick a 5-watch collection that you think would keep you satisfied for a reasonable length of time, say for 18 to 36 months. No rules on new or pre-owned, vintage, etc. So, you know, I think, you know, we've had kind of versions of this question over the years, you know, whether it's a 1-watch or 3-watch or 5-watch. But, you know, look, I mean, every time I revisit this question, I think I pick 5 different watches. So it's...
But I guess in this case, the twist is that it's either watches we have owned or do own.
Yeah, true enough. Yep.
So it's almost like try and focus your collection rather than like rethink it.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I've got 5 I picked, but why don't you go first? I've actually picked 5 that I still own that I would just kind of thin down to.
Yeah, I could easily be very happy with 5 of the watches I have now. And, you know, he's got a timeline of say 18 to 36 months. I don't know. Obviously, mm-hmm. like cool things come up, like I'm can't wait for my Arkin, for example. But like I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I'm never not going to be a guy that's like pretty jazzed about jumping into a new micro brand. But as far as like mm-hmm. stalwarts, things I could have and own and just keep wearing, it'd be for me, Pelagos 39, Explorer 2, 2 really easy ones. Gives me a ton of options there. I think also, you know, I would, we were just talking 144. I had a 144 in the past. And I would probably bring the 144 back. That would give me my Zin. That would give me a chronograph. That would give me another GMT option, which is great.
Yeah.
I have to have an Anadigi. So you in the audience can take your pick, whether it's an Aqualand, which probably would be something like the Chronosport, or the, in this case, I have that Red Devil Breitling sort of oddball watch, or it could be something like E56062 Aerospace.
Yeah.
I would be happy to have that watch back. Also one from my past, which I enjoyed quite a bit. I guess that brings me to, is that 4?
Yeah.
And then I would have to have something from the micro brand space. So I think the ones that I constantly go back to are, I have a couple of Halios. I have a Universa in the teal dial, and I have a Seaforth in the Vancouver spec, the Roldorf spec.
Right.
And I think either one of those would be great. And you know, that list could also go in 20 other directions when it comes to some of the smaller brands that I've had the, you know, good fortune of owning and kind of messing with for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you?
I mean, obviously the Pelagos FXD, which I'm wearing now and which I wear, let's face it, nine days out of every 10. It's just such a fantastic, versatile piece that kind of suits my interests and lifestyle. I think in terms of, I got to have a vintage dive watch, and it's going to be my Doxa Sub 200 T-Graph, which, you know, now that I mention it, I haven't worn that in a while. I need to dig that out and wind it up, but such a fantastic piece. You know, vintage Doxa is so hard to beat. Like, if you've handled one, like, the new ones are great, but there's just something about a vintage one, and they almost always have enough scars on them to show that they've been used for something interesting. Kind of staying on the vintage side of things, I'm still in kind of a love affair with or a honeymoon period with that Breitling Navitimer, the 1954 Navitimer. And I wore it again over the past couple of days on a bund strap, and what a beautiful piece. I mean, I absolutely have such a soft spot for the Navitimer, and just such an icon and such a fun watch to wear. So that one, my 40th birthday Submariner is going to be up there. I think, you know, to have a Rolex in the collection is kind of maybe a predictable choice, but one that, you know, I feel is kind of a necessity, and that watch means a lot to me. And then I'm going with one from your choices as well, with Analog Digital, and I got to have an Aqualand. I think it was
kind of
a watch that I learned of early on, and I can't decide which one it would be. It'd probably just be, you know, I have one of the first generation kind of vintage ones from the 80s that, you know, I've had up to spec and taken diving and whatever. And they're just such cool watches, and the functionality and just the look of them and everything. So I think that's five. And I just think I could be so happy with those five watches. And a lot of it comes down to like what mood you're in on a given week, or even the season, or what you've seen on people's wrists or on Instagram, or, you know, what's popping up on, you know, in the news. Maybe there's a new version of an Aqualand or a new Doxa, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm kind of in a Doxa mood these days. So, you know, ask again in a month and I might have five, or at least three of the five might be different or something. But
yeah, I think exactly. If I did it again while looking at my watch box, I probably would have said my Doxa, which, you know, I still get monthly wear out of, but it's tough getting down to five. I mean, it's probably the reason you and I don't have just five,
right? Yeah.
Is
right.
You know, haven't gotten there yet. So
yeah.
Fun question, Dave. Thank you for that. All right. To close out this run of the Slack Q&A, we've got one from Kai who says, what are some of your favorite albums from high school, and do you still listen to / revisit them, or do they make you cringe now? This could be fun, because my musical taste was, as I think for a lot of people, really formed in high school.
Yeah.
And it totally wrapped around playing the guitar.
Oh.
And being obsessed with the guitar, where, you know, I had certain maybe musical taste beforehand and then afterwards, and it all kind of changed while I was in high school. But I'd be curious, Jason, for you, maybe a couple that you still listen to and one that you know is still in the back of your mind and you know every lyric, but you're not really, you don't really go back to it that often.
Oh man, yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, mine is, this is gonna be a version of, like, you know, the oldies station, or at least 80s rock. You know, I'll be honest, the first album I ever bought, and it was on vinyl, this dates me certainly, was I went out and I bought, and this is my embarrassing choice, to be clear, REO Speedwagon High Infidelity. I think,
oh my gosh, so good though.
It's a great album, and you know, now when I listen to it, it does give me this rush of nostalgia, and there are some great songs, and yeah, I do indeed know, you know, every lyric for most of the songs on that album. But I remember I felt slightly scandalous as like a young teenager buying that album, because the album cover was like a woman in like lingerie putting a record on a turntable. It was like kind of this moody, dark cover of the album. And I was like, yeah, this makes me feel kind of adult and kind of, you know, kind of like I'm doing something I shouldn't be and whatever.
Totally.
And you know, even the title of the album, whatever. So, yeah, that was my first record. But beyond that, I mean, some of them are bona fide classics. I think most people would agree. So by Peter Gabriel, just so many good songs on that album. You know, Red Rain and In Your Eyes and a lot of others. I listened to that so many times. The Joshua Tree by U2, one of the great albums. 1985, The Dream of the Blue Turtles by Sting was his first solo album and really informed a lot of my tastes and things. A lot of his lyrics kind of led me down some paths that I'm still on today and kind of got me jazzed up about jazz music, as a matter of fact, because he did that album with a bunch of well-known jazz musicians. Kind of to follow that up, I think that actually led me into more of a journey into jazz music. And I think I've mentioned this on a past episode. One of my all-time favorite albums that I bought back then and still listen to a lot now is Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. And it's just such a one of the great jazz albums. And, you know, even if you don't know it by name or whatever, like I'm sure you've heard several of the songs from that album because it's often used in films or advertising or just played in kind of smoky or, well, not so smoky these days, but, nightclubs and coffee shops and things like that. So, yeah, those are the ones that take me right back to those days.
That's great. It is. I have a real thing for going back and listening to music, but it has to be kind of in a certain manner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the REO Speedwagon's so funny. That's such a great, I would not necessarily have picked that. I didn't know if you're going to say like the Paolas or something like kind of British late pop or late wave pop.
Oh yeah.
Sort of punk rock from Britain or something like that.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm trying to think, like, if we go really far back, I'm trying to remember, first album I went to the store and bought all on my own was probably Home by a band called Seven Dust, which nobody talks about anymore, kind of in the same vein as, like a POD, maybe Korn adjacent. There's rock and roll, heavy rock, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I had friends that were, like, deeply into the Tea Party and Deftones and all that kind of stuff, and that got us into the guitar. But the earliest that I remember being like genuinely flat out obsessed with a quote unquote modern record, because mm-hmm. I grew up with, you know, my parents had pretty locked in musical taste. You know, we had Chicago, we had the Doobie Brothers, sure. We had all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But for me, it was Sparkle and Fade by Everclear, 1995. So I was nine.
Huh.
I definitely didn't know this album like when it came out.
Yeah.
This would have been more like 12, 13, 14, so several years later. But I still go back and listen to Santa Monica. I just adore that song. I'm not super sure why, but it hits the right zone every time I hear it. My teens, my high school era was really defined by like, there was a time before I got into Pink Floyd, and there's a time after I got into Pink Floyd. And before, we can list a lot of bands that I don't go back and listen to that commonly. Sum 41, probably one of their biggest fans. Obviously, all the pop punk stuff. Anything that would have been on a Warped tour at the time, I was into.
Mm-hmm.
First song I ever downloaded illegally on the internet was Bob by NoFX, which is going to say something about my age. still enjoy that song, but like I'm not going to sit down and listen to a NoFX album that commonly. If it comes on or if I catch it on an expanding playlist on Tidal or something, I'm pretty thrilled to hear it. Rancid, all that kind of stuff. Lots of fun in there. And then my cousin, I was 16. It was the summer I was 16. My cousin, elder cousin, gave me Dark Side of the Moon and said, like, this is going to kind of change things for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it did.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not special for me to say, like, I still listen to Dark. I do. I know every note. I know every. I could play a bunch of it on the guitar at one point. I'm more of a Wish You Were Here guy.
Yeah.
1975. Can't throw anything but love towards Dark Side of the Moon, The Wall. It's all great. Big Pink Floyd fan. The next wave, the wave that Pink Floyd kind of got me to was like appreciating. I mean, the easiest way to describe it is like some slower, easier songs than punk and pop punk.
Yeah.
And it was Coldplay.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know, the U2 of my generation.
Yeah.
Really, this would be the easiest way to describe the difference between your age and my age, Jason.
It's
like you liked U2 and I liked Coldplay.
Sure. Yeah.
And certainly, you know, I would have been 14 when Parachutes came out. I would have been 16 when Rush of Blood to the Head came out. And I still go back and listen to those albums. Like Coldplay became a meme and that sort of thing. And really, it's for me, it's the first two albums. I didn't dislike X and Y. And then the band, I would say, flat out lost me at Viva La Vida.
Mm.
When Coldplay became, and this is me being a hipster or what people say about every band they love, like when they became the kind of band that would play a Super Bowl, I wasn't really in anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you're a little younger than me and you're rolling your eyes because you know Coldplay of the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
go back and check out Parachutes. Go back and check out A Rush of Blood to the Head. They stand up. Really, really solid albums. But and then I think largely if you needed to like explain my musical taste now, it is that blend of garage pop punk stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that I would say what I definitely still listen to from that world is The Vines. I think the greatest, most underrated band of all time. The Vines from Australia. And I think if you take The Vines and you take Coldplay and you take Pink Floyd and kind of blend it all together, you do kind of get like a pretty good scope on my taste in music.
Yeah, I've got a couple of comments as you were talking. For one thing, regarding Pink Floyd, I had to make a pilgrimage to Battersea Power Station when I was in London because it was obviously the cover art or used in the cover art for their record album Animals. Mm-hmm. And it's just such an iconic place.
Great album.
Aside from that, I was curious. Neither of us talked about, and maybe it was straddled or kind of between our high school ages, the era of grunge. Nirvana, Pearl Jam.
Yep.
I did like that stuff. Now, I guess I didn't mention it because it was kind of past my high school age. But you never got into that?
I did. I mean, I grew up in a pretty like strict Christian household.
Yeah.
So like the Kurt Cobain thing wasn't mm-hmm. really understood or like, you know, he was pretty controversial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously there's even just titles of some Nirvana songs that are problematic.
Right.
Let alone the song themselves. And look, it's art. I'm not putting ethics and art together. But I was probably just a little bit too young and in some ways a little bit too sheltered to have grunge. Like my dad wouldn't have been playing Pearl Jam in the garage.
Right.
Whereas I grew up with lots of guys whose dads went from, you know, one minute it was Hot for Teacher and the next minute it was Even Flows. Like that's what was on the radio in their garage, right?
Yeah, yeah. And what about the other band I was curious about that I got into way, way past kind of when they hit the scene and were popular, Radiohead. I totally see you as a Radiohead fan, but are you?
Way more as an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
I miss the Radiohead, the REM,
mm-hmm.
that generation of music. Yeah. The other one that's a very close friend of mine is like a massive Smashing Pumpkins fan.
Oh, okay.
And I know like two Smashing Pumpkins songs.
Huh, yeah.
And it's just an age thing, probably in the similar way to grunge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas by the time I had some freedom, I was going out buying my own albums. I had a Panasonic Shockwave CD player and, you know, like a 48 disc binder the backpack that was supposed to have schoolwork in it.
Yeah, right.
By that point, we were listening to it kind of like not moved on, but those bands were big.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably on whatever like the next wave for a 16 or 17 year old would have been.
Right, right.
But now looking back, I mean, I just Karma Police, man, Creep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like those hits are hits for a reason. They're a reason that they're not going away.
Yeah.
Incredible bands for sure.
Yeah.
That's a fun question.
Well, that was a fun question to close out on.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thank you so much for that one, Kai. And that's going to close out round two of 2024 Slack Q&A. Thank you to everyone who sent in questions. I have a full list of the questions, so we didn't forget anything. We're just going in the order that they were submitted on Slack. So I hope people enjoyed that chat. And I say we close it out with some final notes.
All right. Yeah, good idea. You have two this week, so why don't you jump in? Go first.
I do, yeah. My first one is a shout out to a member of the Slack community, Michael Harris, who partnered with or helped partner and create a project between Notice Watches, which we talked about at the top with the Trail Trekker, and the Pen Addict, which is a blog and podcast all about pen fascination. I think a lot of us can understand the need for such sort of content in our lives. They worked together and created a 38 millimeter version of the Notice Sector Diver, which is the Pen Addict edition. It's got like an orange and gray color scheme. Which is a reference to the members have like a poker chip for the Pen Addict, is my understanding from what I've read. And this one also features a countdown bezel. It's $475. $50 of each one goes to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. It'll be a link in the show notes, so check that out. But I did want to put a shout out there as Michael asked for a little bit of a mention on the show. And I took a look at the watch. It's a great looking watch, especially if you like orange. And a big congrats to Michael and Pen Addict for getting that off the ground with Notice. And also for, you know, bending it a little bit towards us charity. I mean, there's not a ton of margin in a $475 watch. So $50 a watch is pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Good one. All right, quick yeah. one.
And what have you got?
Well, this one is it probably isn't coming as news to many of our listeners or the Slack crew, et cetera.
Took the Slack by storm, for sure.
Oh, it sure did, yeah. Good buddy, local friend, Matt Ludvigsen, who helped us kind of redesign our TGN logo for what it is now, as well as I've worked with him on a number of other projects. He was featured on Teddy Baldassare's YouTube channel in about a 25-minute video called The Watches of a Graphic Designer. So good to see Matt making the trip to Cleveland and sitting down with Teddy to open up his watch roll and show a few of his favorite pieces. Matt has impeccable taste when it comes to watches. He's just an all-around good guy. And some of his choices, well, all of his choices were great. I've seen all of those watches in the metal, and they don't disappoint. And his chat with Teddy was just so fun to see.
Yeah.
So congrats to Matt. Well-deserved on the attention there. And if you're not following Matt, you've got to hit him up on Instagram, because he's a pretty good photographer as well, and just an all-around good guy. So check it out.
Absolutely. Yeah, great video and solid work by Teddy and his team, of course, as always. But yeah, like you said, just a super treat to see Matt kind of profiled and some great watches, as always.
Yeah.
Shout out for that for sure. My second, I don't commonly have two, but I wanted to throw this in there as I got one for my birthday last week. It is a little glass dish from a woman named Morgan Gilbreth. I found these on Instagram. On Instagram, Morgan's account is Morgan Gilb, G-I-L-B, all one word. And she's an artist, and she works primarily with glass based in Richmond, VA, and makes quite a wide range of things, has a shop online. But I came across these on Instagram, and basically they're these... The exact thing that I got is called a salt cellar. So it's a small cut piece of like a frosted glass that has a smoothed out dish, presumably to keep your salt. I'm not going to do that. I've got spring bars in it currently. It's perfect for that. It looks awesome on my desk. I really genuinely love stuff like this. And it was a great gift from my wife. And I thought I'd throw a shout out in there. They're about $70. They come in like 20, 30 different colors, different texts, different sizes. They've got doubles and singles. I can't imagine this will be the last one I own, but it is the first, so I wanted to put a shout out in there to Morgan Gilbreth, and that's morgangilbreth.com. We paid for it. It's not an ad in any way, just a shout out. Really like the product. Have no direct connection with Morgan aside from buying one. And a special thank you to Sarah, my wife, for hooking me up with one. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's a cool one. I love these unique crafts that people do that you know, you just don't think about, or you don't realize until somebody points it out. And so that's exactly why we do final notes, and that's really cool. And spring bars, I mean, that's the perfect use for it.
You got to have a dish for your spring bars.
I don't. And it occurred to me, I need something like that. I probably should just pull a little, you know, I think I stole an ashtray from here we go back to life of crime discussions here. I think I stole an ashtray from a French hotel way back in the day. I probably should pull that out and use it for something like spring bars, but yeah, good call.
Yeah, sometimes stealing stuff is fun. What do you know?
Low stakes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We do not endorse a life of crime on TGN, though.
No, we don't endorse getting caught. Come on. No, exactly. It's funny, for a long time, my desktop, like spring bar catch-all for little bits, screws, things like that, was actually like the radiator cover of a vintage amp that I bought at a garage sale as like a 6-year-old and took apart my bedroom.
Yeah.
These days, I was thinking about this just the other day, because I look at vintage audio equipment with some frequency online. I was like, man, I wonder if that was something special, and I just tore it apart. And all I have that's left of it is a little metal, essentially like a little metal grate.
Oh, sure.
With the corners turned up, it makes like a little rectangular dish.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still have it. It's sitting directly behind me. I don't know why it's managed to stay with me for 30 years, but it has. So I am that type of guy who needs a few things in his life that just maintain tiny items from being lost.
Yes. Yeah.
Which these salt cellars are good for. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah.
And hey, I guess that's an episode.
Yeah. Thanks to everyone who submitted questions this week, or actually it wasn't this week. It was quite a while ago, but
quite some time ago.
Yeah. We had a fun group, and we've got another fun list of questions to come up on our next one, which will be in another few weeks. But until then, thanks so much for listening.
Yep. And if you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, have discussions about which one of our things was a lie and which one was a truth, or consider supporting the show directly and maybe even get a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Yogi Berra, who said, always go to other people's funerals, otherwise they won't come to yours. Yogi's always good for a good quote.
He sure is. I'm not sure half of these he actually said, but I like every single one.